Welcome to the Women in Sport and Exercise Academic Network podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jackie Forsyth, and also co-founder of the network. The purpose of the Women in Sport and Exercise Academic Network is to grow, strengthen, and promote research on women in sport and exercise, with the ultimate goal of optimising women's athletic success and their participation. I'd like to welcome Lorna McKay to the podcast. Lorna is an early researcher currently undertaking her PhD with the Open University on the use of percussive therapy to improve chronic pain among women. Lorna has been involved in several research projects on women, including on footballers, exercise during COVID, and on pregnant women during COVID. In this podcast, I asked Lorna about her research, skills she's acquired regarding interviewing women, and her perspective on doing a PhD as a more mature student. Welcome, Lorna, to this podcast.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you. Can you just start by talking about your most recent work, which is your PhD, because you're doing a PhD with the Open University, and specifically on the research that you will be doing on women?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm doing a PhD with the Open University, and I'm looking at the effect of integrating percussive therapy into warm-ups for strength and conditioning programs to improve chronic non-specific musculoskeletal pain. So that's my ultimate goal, is trying to manage chronic pain, so using the percussive therapy. A lot of people don't know what percussive therapy is, so I'll try and describe it. It's kind of a handheld massage gun, which provides pounding movements to muscles and tendons, and offers therapeutic effects and potential physiological gains, which is something that we've been looking at in the literature review as to what's out there already in terms of research. A little bit of background on it. The first massage gun was invented in 2008, and there's been an increase in recent years in this popularity of using them for kind of strength and conditioning coaches and athletes for potential performance gains. So the massage gun kind of floats over the skin, applying vibration in these pounding motions to the muscle, belly, or the tendon. And in a similar way to exercise, is supposed to kind of increase blood flow, helps with muscle strength and flexibility. And these factors are known in exercise to help reduce experiences of pain. So by combining the percussive therapy and exercise, it's hoping to see what effect that may have then on the pain, whether it kind of it increases its effect, or whether it doesn't really make any difference. So far I've looked at a literature review to see what's out there already, and there's some really positive results on percussive therapy having an impact on muscle strength and flexibility, and also on experiences of pain as well. So having a look through the research, I found only 18% of participants were known to be females. Not all studies reported them, what the mix of gender was. And there was only one study that actually reported them separately. And that one was quite interesting to dive a little bit more into, because it indicated that actually it had a greater effect on women on explosive muscle strength than men. So there's some really interesting research to be done there. So my research then is going to focus on the impact of the percussive therapy on women. Women are very underrepresented in sports and fitness research. So I thought it was a really important area that could be kind of looked at and examined to see kind of what impact it would have.
Well, that's extremely well explained, so thanks for that. So as well, Lorna, you've been involved with a few projects specifically on women, and one particular on pregnant women. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, this was some research that I got involved in through the first lockdown back in March 2020. And it was interviews with women looking at their experiences of pregnancy, birth, and life with a newborn during a pandemic. So it was really interesting to learn of their experiences and their challenges that they encountered in these unprecedented times, and to see how things progressed throughout the pandemic, how they became acclimatized and kind of got customized to the changes that were being put in place. And it was also looking to identify areas where, if we ever got in this situation of a pandemic again, that might help support kind of pregnant women and new mums. And kind of the interview suggested that the restrictions had quite a negative impact on their pregnancy experience. Things like in their maternity leave, there was no baby shopping or baby showers that they could have. For during the birth, the hospital's support, they couldn't have their partners there. Although there was a lot of reports that the hospitals kind of stepped up and tried to fill dad's shoes and support the mums while the dads couldn't be there. And then kind of in their life with a newborn, there was a lack of home visits for baby and mum checks. It was all very difficult to be done over the telephone, but a lot of positive support for breastfeeding. A lot of reports that helps the mums massively. It was quite an interesting comment that a lot of mums said there was a lack of visitors at home when you've got the newborn and family and friends want to come round, which in a way was a bit of a blessing because they didn't have to go around tidying the house and upsetting baby routines. But also it also meant that they couldn't get that extra rest by having somebody come into the house and just take baby for half an hour while you catch up with a little bit of sleep. So yeah, really, really interesting piece of research.
And did any of that impact on the amount of exercise these women were doing?
Not so much with the pregnancy, because a lot of their mums were kind of heavily pregnant or recently given birth. So, you know, they were taking the opportunity to walk with the prams and the babies to get out for walks. But no, there was a separate piece of research I looked at, which was specifically on women and their physical activity.
Okay, if it's okay, if we could move on to the project you've also been involved in, which was on women's football, or is on women's football. And you did a lot of the interviews and the describing of the data and the analysis as well. Was there anything that you felt that came out of the interviews from all of the data that you thought, oh, that was quite interesting, or was something that was particularly new that hadn't been considered so much in depth before?
Yeah, there was a few areas. I think initially it was quite surprising how much inequality there still was in pay for female players compared to the male players. But at the same time, the female players had that understanding that at the moment, men's football is far more popular than the female game, which brings in more finance to the clubs, which allows them to pay these bigger salaries. So although the inequality is there, there was the understanding as to why it was still there. And that kind of led to a need to promote women's football more through the media coverage. And there was a couple of avenues that teams went down, and it's improving. And some teams were integrating or piggybacking off the men's teams and using their popularity to promote their own game. Whereas other teams were using the fact that they were slightly different, being a women's team only, and using that novelty aspect to try and gain extra interest. So the pay and the media coverage were an interesting element. A couple of other areas related kind of specifically to females, which was looking at female athletes in general, really, not just footballers, that quite often will wait to start a family until after their sporting career. But there's more evidence now of a few women returning to sport after pregnancy if they have the right support. It was found, though, that a lot of players that had returned in the interviews that we did, that their support didn't necessarily come from the club, but came from the other players around them that would sit on the benches and look after the children and the babies while they are having a practice or a match. And the other area that was quite a bit of an eye-opener was the lack of awareness of the effect of the menstrual cycle on performance, with the changes of hormones that a female will go through. And that led to not much discussion about it between players and coaches. Some clubs were really good at monitoring the cycle using various apps and would adapt their training to take these changes into account. But there was quite a few that it was just a taboo subject, wasn't talked about.
Going back to your first point about equality of pay, and you said, the women kind of understood that. There's a suggestion that women just have to accept it and they'll accept anything because they're so grateful for having any type of money. And that's almost come about because football is such a patriarchal, misogynistic kind of environment, or has been historically. So the women kind of then feel, oh, right, well, as long as I get something. Did you get that sense?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of women that, like you say, they were on minimum pay, or some of them that would be keen to just get the minimum pay so that they could play football, but and kind of not have to get other jobs to cover it financially. So yeah, very much an acceptance of, yeah, it is the way it is. But, you know, and a lot of work that goes on around football to help, you know, kind of earn a living, really.
And what kind of things or skills have you learned along the way? Because you've done a lot of interviews, particularly with women, and maybe particularly with more vulnerable women in terms of being pregnant or the issues that they've encountered during COVID. Is there anything that you've learned particularly on how to do these interviews effectively to get the most out of them?
Yeah, it was quite interesting because most of the interviews I've conducted have been on a telephone because we've been in COVID lockdown. So it was really important to take into account the fact that body language and facial expressions couldn't be seen. So you couldn't just nod in acknowledgement of what was being said. It had to be verbally put across so that they knew you were listening. And, you know, and it wasn't just questions for the sake of questions. It was kind of making it a more of a conversation. And let's say, particularly with vulnerable groups, with COVID, there was a lot of kind of sad stories that came out of family members being affected. It was having that empathy and giving them the time to respond. So, you know, giving them the space to be emotional if they wanted to, but that understanding to it was within their control what they how the interview went and what they wanted to say.
Okay, that's some good advice. And as well, you've come into academia a little bit later as more of a mature student. How have you found that particular process then? Because maybe a lot of people might think if they hit a certain age, they might go, no, I'm not going to do a PhD. It's too late for me. What would your advice be for them?
I've absolutely loved my studying journey. It started, I guess, as my children got older and there wasn't the need for me to be around so much. Yeah, you know, they still needed me, obviously, but not as much as they did. They didn't need that care. So, you know, they became more independent. And because I run my own business, I was able to study and work and be a mum all at the same time. I've always done studying remotely. So that's helped me massively. So I didn't have to go in on certain days into a university. I could fit it in evenings, the odd hour here and there. And that suited me and my way of life really well. I haven't been studying for financial reasons. It's not for financial gain, as in promotions in work, because I do run my own business. It's more for my own personal achievement. And I think that gives you the motivation and that dedication to keep going.
Well, that's great. I think we've covered a number of topics here. We've gone from what you've been doing in your PhD, your projects you've done, and a little bit of advice, I guess, for others who might be contemplating doing a PhD. So thanks very much for joining me on this podcast.
Pleasure. Lovely to talk to you.